Popping certain heartburn drugs like their candy might up your odds for stomach cancer, new research suggests. The risk was proportionate to how long and how often these drugs, called protein pump inhibitors, were taken. That risk increased anywhere from 2 to 8 times, the study authors said. Although the relative risk seems high, the absolute risk was small, but it was statistically significant, especially for people infected with Helicobacter pylori, a bacteria linked to stomach cancer, the researchers explained. PPIs include commonly used drugs like Prilosec, Nexium, and Prevacid. Eliminating H. pylori lowers the risk of stomach cancer significantly, lead researcher Dr. Wei Kyung Lung said, but even after the bacteria is treated, many people still develop stomach cancer. The report was published online October 31st in the journal Gut. The tiny thyroid gland could have a big impact on heart health, new research suggests. Middle-aged and older adults with an elevated thyroid hormone may be at higher risk of heart disease and death, researchers found. In the new Dutch study, high and even high normal levels of a hormone called 3-thyroxine doubled the odds of having calcification of the coronary arteries. This can be a sign of arteriosclerosis, commonly called hardening of the arteries. Higher FT4 levels were also linked to an 87% greater risk of having a heart attack or stroke and twice the risk of dying from one. High FT4 is indicative of an overactive thyroid, explained lead researcher Dr. Arjola Bano of Erasmus University in Rotterdam. The report was published online October 31st in the journal Circulation Research. More than half of Americans regularly take about 4 prescription medications, increasing the likelihood that mistakes could occur, according to Consumer Reports. People taking multiple prescription medications should visit their doctor for a medication checkup by showing their doctor or pharmacist a comprehensive list of every drug they are taking, including vitamins and other dietary supplements. Patients can be warned about potentially harmful interactions. They can also find out if any of these medications are no longer necessary, which would save them money. Consumer Reports encourages patients to have this type of medication review at least once a year. Deputy editor Lisa Gill said much medication use is life-saving without a doubt, but some drugs can potentially do more harm than good. Our concern is that inappropriate prescribing can lead to unnecessary risk, including trips to the emergency room. If your taste buds lean towards spicy, you might be doing your heart a favor, new research suggests. Spicy foods may increase salt sensitivity, thereby dampening the desire to consume heart-harming salty food, researchers in China say. High salt intake increases blood pressure and contributes to cardiovascular disease, said study author Dr. Ziming Zhu. Thus, reducing salt intake is very important for health. We find that the enjoyment of spicy foods significantly reduced individual salt preference, daily salt intake, and blood pressure, he added. Zhu is director of Daiping Hospital's Center for Hypertension and Metabolic Diseases at 3rd Military Medical University in Chongqing. The findings were released online October 31st in the journal Hypertension.
We have Mel Schwartz, author of The Possibility Principle, with us today. He's a psychotherapist and a marriage counselor. But the book he's written about The Possibility Principle is what we are going to talk about today. Welcome, Mel.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Oh, it's so great to have you on the line. So tell us a little bit about this possibility principle. Help us to understand what it is.
Well, the possibility principle, and I should share with your listeners that I am a psychotherapist, but the way I think has been very influenced by quantum physics. I'm not a scientist. I don't get into the formulas, but there's some basic principles of quantum physics that I find enhance our lives and our relationships, and that's what I call the possibility principle. There are several. One of the principles of quantum physics is that reality is uncertain. Yet in our lives, we're always seeking certainty. We want to know what the future is going to bring. We seek predictability. This leads to anxiety and fear in our lives. I've seen that when we learn to embrace uncertainty, the opposite of what we were taught to do, uncertainty equals possibility. Hence my title, The Possibility Principle. When we can embrace uncertainty, we engage in our change process. We become the architects of our life experience. The other principle in quantum physics is inseparability, which is as odd and counterintuitive as it may sound. Reality is fundamentally inseparable, just like the Eastern religions always told us, but now science is proving it to be true. Well, if we embrace inseparability, we learn to develop compassion and empathy for each other. It really helps our relationships thrive. So my book, The Possibility Principle, is a new game plan for living life to help us overcome our insecurities and fears, overcoming anxiety. I gave a talk yesterday, a TEDx talk, called Transcending Anxiety, using these principles and developing a new communication so we can thrive in our relationships.
So it's actually a paradigm shift in the mind when people are coming in with anxiety and depression, not really helping them with it, but helping them change the way they think?
Yes. In other words, anxiety is due to fear. It's due to fear of the future. Our need to know the future creates anxiety. But the future is really unknowable. So we have to shift our relationship with this fear of uncertainty. We actually have to see uncertainty as our welcome ally, because that's where we can manifest new possibilities in our lives. So we have to learn to think differently about what we were told reality looks like.
Okay, so, but anxiety and depression is may not be biochemical, but rather the way we think. But there are some people where it is biochemical, isn't it?
Well, I have a chapter in my book around mind-body. And in that chapter, I say there's no mind-body connection because there's no mind-body separation. So here's what I mean. If you were walking at the beach and you look behind you, you see your footprint in the sand.
Right.
Now, you wouldn't think the sand produced your footprint. Your foot left its mark in the sand. I look at biochemistry that way. If I have happy, joyful thoughts, loving thoughts, that's going to affect my biochemistry and my brain chemistry. If I have fearful, angry thoughts, that's going to alter my biochemistry and my brain chemistry. So I look at thought as the key factor of consciousness and reality, and thought leaves its impact. So if you have fearful, negative thoughts throughout your life, your brain chemistry is no doubt going to be altered because of it. We can detect it there. But I don't see that as the cause. I see it as the symptom. And I see that as good news, because it means we're not hardwired. We're not at the mercy of our biochemistry. We can change it all when we begin to think correctly.
Wonderful. In your book, you say the most important relationships are not with family or loved ones, but with our thoughts. That's pretty profound, because people are always looking outside themselves. How do you get people to have a wonderful relationship with their thoughts?
I teach the reader, firstly, to be able to see your thought. If you can see your thought, you don't have to become your thought. If you can see your thought, then you're actually thinking. So picture hearing, so you're sitting in a room and you hear a knock at the door. You hear the knock. It's up to you whether to open the door or not. We can learn to develop this new muscle memory where we can see the thought and then choose whether to attach to that thought and become the thought or not. I call this a mastery of thinking, and it's really regrettable that we weren't taught how to do this in school as children, because it's a very valuable technique. And when I can develop this ability to see my thought, I'm no longer imprisoned by my old thoughts.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is absolutely huge, and one of their biggest projects is anxiety and depression. How do you come to terms with the psychiatric industry and the pharmaceutical industry being bound together?
I don't come to terms with it. It has nothing to do with healing. It is start to finish all about profit. And for example, I wrote an article a number of years ago, which was highly read, and it was called A Misdiagnosis. I suggested that in the U.S. we have the DSM, that's the Bible of all diagnoses, and I suppose it is throughout the world, perhaps. Well, they take their diagnoses and think that they're actually real things, as opposed to made-up things that we use to describe. So what I mean by that is, if someone says to me, you know, John has ADHD, I'd say, he can't have ADHD. It's not a real thing. It's a description of what we think we see. And when we use it as a description, it's fine. But coming back to your question, the collusion between psychiatry And the pharmaceutical industry is horrific because it doesn't help individuals cure or heal their problems. They're simply dealing with their symptoms. I do not believe in medicating anxiety. Anxiety can be overcome when you develop a mastery of your thinking. Now, I have worked with some people who are clinically depressed, but in the large part, most of depression comes from a feeling of isolation, low self-esteem. Well, we can help people develop authentic self-esteem and come out of feeling disconnected and isolated so they can thrive in their lives. But throwing medication at them, for the most part, isn't helpful. There are some cases where I have found it helpful, but they're the exception, not the rule.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's still, when people are on those kind of medications, you have to be so careful coming off and finding the right help.
Yes, you do. It has to be done with care and sensitivity. Many people I've worked with ask me how they can go off of their medication, and that's not my area of expertise. So I will refer them to somebody who is devoted to helping wean them off of their medication. You see, sometimes, I think it's in a large part, depression is environmental, meaning it's situational. Somebody came to see me once, and her husband had just left her. She had three young children. She didn't have a settlement yet. She didn't know how she'd pay the bills. And her psychiatrist had told her she needed antidepressant medication. Well, if she weren't feeling depressed, that would have been a problem. Mm-hmm. Because her life circumstances at that moment were fearful and depressing. She needs assistance on developing coping mechanisms so she can be resilient and deal with it. Not medication so that she can make believe everything's okay, because it isn't okay.
And how do you help people detoxify their minds, like people are always detoxifying their bodies, to allow the mind and the brain to function properly? How do you detox it?
Well, I began teaching workshops called Detoxing Your Mind. So what I mean by that is, again, identifying your core beliefs and your core thoughts that limit you. So a core belief could be, I'm not smart enough, or I'm a loser, or I never get the breaks, or nobody likes me, or no one loves me. Those are core beliefs. And out of those beliefs, you will have millions of thoughts that correspond to that belief. That's toxic. It's ruinous. So I help people understand, and I explain in detail in my book, The Possibility Principle, how you can learn to see those toxic thoughts and replace them with new thinking, which might sound like being able to say to yourself, it's just a belief. It's just a thought. It has scripted my life, but I can learn to release it and create a new script for my life. It's a process, and it is achievable.
Wonderful. We're going to have to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about the possibility principle with Mel Schwartz.